Bonjour and hello. Welcome inside episode 18. 18 of Les Brioligas. We're almost at, I don't know what you would call 20.
Just, I was going to say double digits, but we've been at double digits for 8
yeah,
episodes.
Yeah, we're almost at 2 decades, whatever. We're moving along here on the Les Brioligas podcast. Mitch, I gotta hand it to you. I'm gonna do it. Well played. For everyone listening, I'm speaking to you as a loser. Mitch has beaten me in round one of the fantasy hockey playoffs. It came down the worst possible case. Max Pacioretty sunk me on the Sunday night, putting up an assist and 5 shots to push me. Congrats. I hope you second round. I hope you flame out 7-0.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's the score right now, so it might be
for you or against
me. So it might be
right. See, that's justice for everyone listening. In case you don't know, Mitch is a serial fantasy hockey cheater. I believe the first year we were in a league together, he conspired with the enemy and put together a really brutal one-sided trade to try and push him over the edge, and there was a lot of complaining about that. And then the next year him and I were in the cellar, and he purposely did not start all of his players to try and get McDavid, so obviously I kicked a huge fuss and I ended up with McDavid in our keeper league. Not a big deal, but yeah, I think it's past the point where I wish Mitch any success in fantasy hockey.
How much did McDavid help you last week?
Not very much. I mean, look, like, the guy's putting up like 3 points a game. It's pretty embarrassing that I've got him on my team and still lose. Like, I'm basically the Chiarelli of fantasy GMs. Like, I can't make it work with him.
And you have Kane and Carlson too. Your team,
I mean,
on paper,
Elliot,
is
well,
stupid.
Hello. Carlson was injured. Like, that definitely sucked for me. Yeah. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Anyways, that's enough. Like, I'm not here to complain about my fantasy woes. You know, that is life. And I mean, the real test comes, and I'm in a new playoff pool now where I enter with a buddy, and it's we won $400 last year, tied for first. So that's I'm really circling the calendar for that draft. It's good fun.
To be fair,
also the commission.
The only reason I'm here is to hear you complain about fantasy hockey. So.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, you know, if it had been the other way around, I'd really be, I'd really be putting the gears on you. So I mean, it's only fair. All right, well, let's switch from fantasy hockey to real hockey. And you know, the big story this week is happened Monday night. Toronto got absolutely spanked by the Tampa Bay Lightning in their own barn. 6-2 the final, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, 6-2 the final, but man, just an awful performance. I mean, Anderson actually played a great game. He made some key saves, but he got pulled after the third goal, and it was just clear that it was going to be a long night for the goalies. And yeah, indeed, Sparks fared no better. Actually, no, sorry, 4-0. He got pulled at 4-0. But I mean, Toronto just, you know, pretty much run out of their building. And as James Myrtle put in The Athletic, a pretty big wake up call for the Maple Leafs.
Two hilarious moments today. One being Austin Matthews tipping a puck that was going very far wide into his own net, and the other one being the 3-on-1 shorthanded breakaway they got scored against, where literally the entire line just changed and left Riley and Anderson there to try and defend. And by that point, I mean, I was watching it with a bunch of Leaf fans, as kind of ends up being the case in being in
Kitchener. Ontario.
Yeah.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, it's what kind of happens. And yeah, they were just I mean, it's pretty funny to you know, watch Leaf fans right now as they know exactly who they're going to be playing in the first and you know, even second round of the playoffs if they get through, basically. And just how worried they are and how frustrated they are that, you know, they've had such a good season and they're such a good team, but they've still got to deal with the Boston Bruins and Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why don't we send it over now to Scott Wheeler. Scott Wheeler is the reporter covers the Leafs and Marlies in Toronto for The Athletic, and he joined us to talk about the game and everything Leafs. So without further ado, let's send it over to him. Pretty much at the center of what is the super tornado hurricane eye of the storm that is Leafs Nation. Scott Wheeler, the reporter for the Leafs Marlies and the National Prospect Writer. Thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. Let me get this out of the way. The question on everyone's lips, is there any relation to Blake Wheeler of the Winnipeg Jets?
There is absolutely no relation whatsoever to Blake Wheeler of the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, maybe about 10 generations ago, but as far as I know.
All right, we're breaking news here on the Late Beer Leaguers podcast. No relation whatsoever to Blake Wheeler.
I get the same thing with Senators Tierney every once in a while, and it's always so sad. Someone will come up to my parents and be like, oh, your son's playing for the Senators now, and they have to be like, no, no, he is not.
Yeah. No athletic talent on this side of the family. Yeah, anyways, I want to ask, obviously, let's get right into the game that happened Monday night between the Lightning and the Maple Leafs. It was billed as, you know, a battle of two of the best teams in the league, but it definitely did not live up to that. James Myrtle called it a real, I guess, a wake-up call for the Toronto Maple Leafs. How do you see that game, and what do you think it says about the Leafs' chance at a deep run in the playoffs this year?
Well, first of all, I thought the game from sort of top to bottom was just a little bit of an embarrassment for the Leafs, and the Leafs haven't had that happen too often in the last few years. Heading into that game, the Leafs had only lost one game to a team other than the Boston Bruins in the last two seasons by four or more goals. So that really is a kind of rare situation for them, if you will. And I thought they just didn't handle it really well in any real way. I thought that obviously there's a factor at play in the injury troubles that they currently have in Jake Gardner and Travis Dermott. And then you've got more to it than that with apparently a flu bug that's going around the team, but there's still no excuses to go on home ice and play like that against a team that you're ultimately almost certainly going to have to face in the second round if you make it that. I wouldn't read too much into their odds in their playoffs and that kind of thing. It's hard to take that much away from one game, especially considering the Leafs in the previous two matchups with the Tampa Bay Lightning this year actually played quite well. But on the whole, I would say that it was an extremely disappointing game and probably a much-needed wake-up call.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that the Leafs are almost certainly going to have to play them in the playoffs, you know, if they want to kind of get to where they want to be in this year's postseason. That, you know, that's kind of something that's really being brought to the forefront right now is the fact that, you know, especially this year, three of the top four teams in the NHL will probably be playing each other in the playoffs, and likely only one of them is, you know, is going to be in that conference final. I mean, that's the case. Only one of them will be in the conference final because of the way, you know, the format's set up. Is this one of those years where, this format's really being brought to the forefront as a little silly, and this might be a tipping point to go back to 1-8 or even a different format where, you know, it's a little more fair to some of these teams that have put together fantastic seasons, but now we'll have to face each other just because of, you know, where they are located.
Well, I think from top to bottom that the format is a little ridiculous, to be quite honest. I think it's certainly been brought to the forefront this season because it's the Leafs, and the Leafs draw a lot of attention, and the Toronto media is one to talk about the Leafs and kind of bring it to the forefront. But it's been a problem ever since it was sort of created and ever since its inception. I mean, you go back a few years, you had Pittsburgh and Columbus, two of the top five teams meeting in the first round. Then you had Winnipeg and Nashville last year. You've got it in the other conference this season where the team that finishes second in their division between the San Jose Sharks and the Calgary Flames is going to have to play a tough first or second in the other division just by sort of seeding is working out, and the fact that the third team in San Jose and Calgary's division is a very good Vegas team. So it just disadvantages teams that are strong within their own division, and I think ultimately it's something absolutely no reason that you should put a grueling 82-game season to bed when all is said and done, and that a team that finishes third or fourth in the regular season among 31 teams shouldn't have home ice advantage in the playoffs. So there's just so much at play at this point and so much on the line, and parity is what it is. And I just think it's absolutely crazy that we're in a situation now where you could have a second and third best team in the league play in the first round, and then they have to play the first best team in the league in the second round. And all of those things just make absolutely no sense. The regular season should be rewarded a lot more than it is. And I think the only way to really do that is to go back to the 1-8.
Yeah, well, actually, Stamkos was asked about this today, and I thought he had a really great soundbite. You know, usually players are, like, I don't know, pretty closed-lipped when it comes to these kinds of issues, but he basically said that, you know, he understands it from the marketing perspective because, you know, there's been unbelievable rivalries that have, you know, grown from this playoff format, but from the player's perspective, they grind through an 82-game season, and exactly like you just said, Tampa Bay is putting together a historic season where they've already clinched a playoff spot, you know, with, you know, whatever, 15 games to go, and, you know, they're going to have to play probably Boston and or Toronto to get to the conference final, two of the other top five teams in the league. So in your opinion, being around the league so much, what do you think is going to win out going forward? Do you think it'll be that player's perspective or that league perspective? Because it is two kind of opposing forces that have, you know, a pretty powerful say in, you know, what goes on in the league.
Yeah, and honestly, I question whether it is really a major benefit for the league and whether that marketing perspective is even one that holds a ton of value. I mean, you go back, and I've gone back and looked at the sort of rivalries that it's created, and they haven't been as pronounced as people might think. People always say, oh, well, it created the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh rivalry, and the answer is no, it didn't. The Pittsburgh-Philadelphia rivalry began in 2012 when it was a 1-versus-8 format, and they had not even begun to play in this divisional format when we had that classic series. And the same goes for the major matchup that people talk about between the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. That happened in 2013 before this format was ever created. So the only teams where I think it's true that this format has created a sort of marketing rivalry is between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals. But I would argue on the flip side for the NHL that they lose a lot by having top teams out of the playoffs early. And it means that teams like the Ottawa Senators, who marched their way through, I believe it was the sixth and fifth best team in their conference on their way to the conference finals, while the Pittsburgh Penguins that same season, who played them in the conference finals, had to go through the first and third best teams in their conference. It results in teams that don't deserve to be there being there. And I think ultimately that's bad for viewers and it's bad for marketing. And I really do think that the player's perspective will kind of win out over time. And I mean, Stamkos hit the nail on the head where it's not just a Leafs problem. The Leafs get all of the talk because there's so much media here, but it really is the same problem for the Boston Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning, where those teams are at a huge disadvantage after excellent regular seasons.
So it's been almost guaranteed for some time now that the Leafs will be playing the Bruins in the first round once again. Something that, you know, I'm sure a lot of Leaf fans are dreading considering their past history. But, well, you know, even looking at a game like last night, what are some of the lessons that the Leafs can take from that? And as they kind of push into those more important games against, you know, the really top teams in the NHL, in the Bruins, you know, what needs to improve in the sense of, as Jacob mentioned, the kind of wake-up call that they got last night?
Well, I think the biggest thing for them is, A, they need to get healthy, and B, they need to rely, it's hard to sort of put this into the proper context, but they need to rely on their skill a little less. And by that, I mean that they play a fast and loose game that doesn't rely on their structure breaking out of their own zone, and it's something I've been critical of a lot this season. And I don't think they need to be physical or they need to sort of bully teams out of the rink. That's by no means the kind of game that they should or ought to be playing. They need to play as fast as possible. But I think they can play faster by sort of using their skill to make shorter passes and rely a little bit less on the stretch pass and allow their skill to make little plays rather than swinging for the home run, which so rarely works at this level. And teams have, like the Boston Bruins, have learned to defend against. So I think they rely a little bit too much on that stretch pass. And frankly, I just think they need to get healthy. I think if they're fully healthy and everybody's clicking, then they are going to be a force. They're one of the scariest teams in the league. And on any given sort of series, I think they could take the Boston Bruins. So it'll be a tight series. I think it could go either way. It's probably going to come down to a coin flip, give or take, and goaltending and a little bit of luck. But the Leafs need to sort of get back on track here because it's now been about a month where they've looked pretty mediocre.
Yeah, actually, so I just want to ask you one last question about the Leafs before we move on, is exactly that goaltending. I mean, I feel like it's kind of flown under the radar a little bit this year, just how much the Leafs have relied on Frederik Andersen. I mean, he's tops of most of the goalie categories, and I mean, his 922 save percentage is pretty unreal. But are you concerned at all that, you know, that might come back to bite the Leafs in the playoffs? I mean, either if Andersen can't keep his consistency up, or if, you know, he's played 51 games already this year, if fatigue catches up with him, are you worried at all about Frederik Andersen and how much the Leafs are relying on him, or do you think it won't be an issue going to the playoffs?
Well, I think that will likely depend on how many games Andersen ends up playing. Babcock came out last week and said that they're going to cap him at in the high 50s, and then he said that he misspoke and that it would be closer to 60. I think if they can keep him in the high 50s, that he should be all right, and you shouldn't expect too much of a drop-off come playoffs. But if he ends up in the high 60s and they can't go to Garrett Sparks more consistently down the stretch here, then that's when things there's probably cause for concern, because I thought he looked worn down in the playoffs last year. And I think if you get better goaltending out of him earlier in that series against the Bruins last year, then you've definitely got a different fate. So I really do believe that fatigue was a factor there, and that they need to kind of limit his starts down the stretch. And they're going to play Boston regardless of what happens here, and that means they should be able to feel a little bit more comfortable going to Garrett Sparks.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's turn our attention now. I want to ask you about a pretty big name prospect who's going to be making his NHL debut pretty soon. That's Vancouver Canucks defenseman Quinn Hughes. He's coming over to sign in midseason after his season ended. What can you tell us about Quinn Hughes? I don't know too much about him other than that he's a highly touted prospect. Do you think he's going to be one of those guys that has an immediate NHL impact, or is this more, you know, adding some optimism for the future for the Canucks? And what do you think his ceiling is? What do you think he's going to attract to be in the NHL?
Well, he's magic. He is truly one of those transformational kind of prospects. He's a kid who has been brilliant every step of the way. He's a little bit on the smaller end for a defenseman, and that was part of the reason that he fell to the Vancouver Canucks. I had him third or fourth all year, and really didn't expect him to fall as far as he did, but ultimately size was the only ever real concern with him. People complained about his lack of a sort of NHL shot, if you will, but he has proven to be so dynamic as a skater and as a puck handler and as a passer that a lot of those things aren't major issues. And I think he's going to be a true star in the league and one of the better defensemen in the league. And I don't know whether that will happen immediately. He'll probably get eased into it late this season if he gets into games consistently at all. And then next season, I suspect that he'll put himself probably in the Calder Trophy conversation as one of the sort of top young players in the league. And I really do think that he's ready for that. He's just a magical skater. The things he can do with the puck as a defenseman are the things that you expect out of high-end forwards, and that allows him to just be dynamic offensively and create offense basically whenever he wants. And he has the skating ability to get back in transition if he makes a mistake and sort of cover for himself. So he kind of ticks all of the boxes, and I think he's going to be a high-end defenseman.
Wow.
Yeah, certainly a lot of praise for, like you said, one of the top prospects right now in the NHL. Before we let you go, Scott, on Thursday it is Hockey Stories Night with The Athletic at the Rivoli. Yourself, Sean Fitzgerald, Joshua Cloak, Dan Robson, and host Haley Salvian will be speaking about some of your features you've written with The Athletic live. What can, you know, hockey fans expect from this event, and you know, what will be something of a unique night?
Yeah, I think this one's a little bit different than people who've visited Puck Talks are kind of used to. I think some of the feedback we've received over the last few years doing this, and I've done a bunch of these now, is that people really enjoy kind of the inside stories, and people are certainly there to talk hockey, and they'll talk about the Leafs or whoever and until the night is over. But I think people have really grown to love kind of the perspective that some of the writers are able to add, and some of those inside stories that they've had access to, and that kind of a thing. And so that's what this night's going to be all about. We're going to focus a little bit, maybe less on the sort of X's and O's of hockey and the details of the Toronto Maple Leafs and that kind of thing. And we're going to turn our attention to some of the really cool stories that we've done over the years and what it's like to sort of cover these teams and cover these guys and really dig in on unconventional stories and stories that haven't been told before. And I think that's kind of what Puck Talks is all about. Puck Talks is supposed to be different, and I think this week's event will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, one of those stories you'll be talking about is your trip on the road with the ECHL's Brampton Beast. Give the people kind of a quick preview of what they can expect from that story, because I read it myself, and that's a pretty wild journey you took there.
Yeah, it really was. I kind of began the legwork on that story really early in the season last year. So we're talking October of, I guess it would have been 2017. And I spent about 3-4 months with the team, basically visiting them twice a week, once a week, here and there, and stopping in and practicing with them. I took to the ice with them for a practice. and just kind of spent a
So
lot of
cool.
time around the players. And ultimately, what came of it was just this really interesting inside look at what it's like to play sort of minor pro hockey at the lowest level, and how difficult it really is, and all of the things that these players sacrifice, and the conditions that they have to play through. And then it kind of culminated with a 4-day trip I took with them through rural United States, and sort of watched them go on a 3-game, 3-days road trip, and they lost all 3 games, and it was in the middle of a cyclone. And they were able to really open up to me, and it was one of those rare stories, I think, where players are just after enough time with someone, they feel comfortable around them. And it would have been easy for them to say, who the hell is this guy? But they kind of opened up their lives to me. So it was really cool, sort of look at what they do, and a story that's kind of never been told, I hope.
Well, there you go. That event will take place on March 14th, as I said, this Thursday at the Rivoli, 6:30 are the doors, and you can head over to homestandsports.com/events to grab your tickets. We'll be giving away 1-year subscription for a lucky non-athletic subscriber. So if you want to find out what the site's all about, this is a pretty great opportunity to do so. Scott, thank you very much for joining the show this week, though.
Cheers. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, big thanks to Scott Wheeler once again for hopping on the pod to talk to us all things Leafs and you know, what to expect from that athletic event coming up. Pretty awesome prize, I'm not going to lie. I'm a huge athletic junkie, so if anyone who listens to the pod isn't subscribed to The Athletic and lives in Toronto and has some time to kill and is a big hockey fan, and I'm trying to think of anything else I can do to whittle this down, but definitely go check out that event. It's I've been to one or two. They're a lot of fun. And The Athletic, if you're any kind of sports fan, it's a must have. It's like the equivalent of Netflix for TV or Spotify for music. It's a must have. So definitely get on that. And yeah, once again, for the Leafs, we're, I guess, kind of happy to see them get beaten down a little bit, especially after Sportsnet, you know, was billing this as the two best teams in the league and absolutely going to be a classic game. And then to get schooled in your own barn like that was, I guess, pretty embarrassing for Leafs Nation.
Yeah, well, there's best teams in the league, and then there's as good as Tampa is. I mean, point difference between them and the Bruins, who are in second place right now, is the same as the point difference between the Bruins and the 16th place Philadelphia Flyers, who aren't going to be making the playoffs. So that's just a ridiculous statement as to how good the Tampa Bay Lightning are at this point in the season.
Yeah.
And they showed that again against the Leafs last night. I mean, it wasn't particularly close, and it wasn't close after the first, you know, it was done like by 15 minutes into the second period. So, the big wake up call for the Toronto Maple Leafs, as we've mentioned on multiple occasions, if they want to, get anywhere close to what they want to accomplish in this year's playoffs. I mean, it's just so tough for them right now as they play a Bruins team who's probably one of the worst matchups for them, in the entire league in the first round, and then they'd have to play Tampa if they can get through that.
I hope someone listening has been keeping count of how many times we've said wake up call in this episode so far, because it's definitely, we're running up a series tally. I had one more Tampa stat, and then we'll move on. I remember Mitch Melnick saying this on his show a week or two back. It was in the middle of Boston's, big unbeaten in regulation run. I think it had been something like 13 or 14 games where they hadn't lost in regulation. And in that time, they'd gained 1 point on the Tampa Bay Lightning. One freaking point without, going 14. It's just, it's unbelievable. There's Tampa, like you said, is head and shoulders above everyone else, but only matters what happens in the playoffs. So we'll see what happens come April.
Yeah, real quiet ACC last night.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
And so you could pick up a lot of things on the mics, and unfortunately, one of them kind of sounded like a homophobic slur. So there was a big thing about that. Yeah, so the NHL looked into it, and it clearly
wasn't Riley directed at a linesman.
Yeah, so that's what it sounded like. So anyway, clearly they reviewed the footage and everything. It wasn't what he said. Even listening back, it sounds like two separate voices saying two different things. Either way, it's not the case, and there was a very good conversation generated by the Leafs about it. But The one I really wanted to key in on was you can clearly hear at some point during one of the Leafs power plays, and their power play was horrible last night. We talked about the fact that, you know, Tampa scored a 3-on-1 shorthanded, which was just ridiculous. But you can clearly hear the bench yelling, "Ennis, get the hell off the ice! What are you doing?" And there's like a whole bunch of ad libs like that, so it was pretty hilarious to get kind of a, you know, some of the Leafs' frustration on the airwaves.
Yeah, actually, another thing I remember that was weird from that game is the first time I've ever heard a linesman left the game due to illness. I've never heard of that. They officiated like the second half of the game with two refs and only one linesman. So whatever flu bug hit the Maple Leafs must have been pretty freaking bad, because it knocked out a linesman mid-game. Like, I've never heard of that. That's so crazy. Okay, let's shift focus though from the top of the Eastern Conference to the wild card battle in the Eastern Conference, and let's start with the Columbus Blue Jackets, man. I said I love the moves that Kekalainen made at the deadline, loading up on Duchene and Dzingel, and I guess McQuaid, if you want to call that loading up. Mm-hmm. But they're barely clinging on to the brutal shot at McQuaid. I hope he doesn't hear this, or he's going to beat the living fuck out of me. They're barely clinging onto a playoff spot, man. They're currently tied with Montreal on 79 points. Only 69 plus 13 is 82. 13 games left to play for each of them. Math guy over here. It looks at this point like those deals might backfire. What do you think? It's pretty much at this point with Pittsburgh looking like they're turning on the Jets. It seems like it's between Columbus and Montreal for that last playoff spot, and it's real crapshoot between the two of them. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe Carolina in that conversation as well. Although they're really good right now,
red hot like Pittsburgh. Yeah,
yeah, and they've had the numbers to kind of back it up all season. So I think they might potentially have the edge in this race. But yeah, I mean, since the trade deadline, they've only won 3 games, and they've been outscored 14-25. And I know one of the things you mentioned during our trade deadline show was chemistry and how much of an aspect that is. And at the time, you were talking about the Nashville Predators, because they were losing players directly off of their roster.
Yeah, two off, two on, right?
To make those kind of deals. Neither of us really brought up the fact that, you know, Columbus has so many players coming into a system, and one with John Tortorella, who's notoriously, you know, a major systems coach and also a very demanding coach. Clearly, it hasn't worked out in the early going. I mean, Matt Duchene, 1 goal, 3 assists in 10 games. Ryan Dzingel hasn't scored yet, and he only has 3 assists. It's been pretty tough for two players that they were expecting to add a lot of offense into their lineup. And like you said, there's such a huge difference between, you know, say a Montreal Canadiens who are close on the bubble and weren't expected to be here, and a Columbus Blue Jackets team that mortgaged a whole bunch of their futures to go all in here. You know, it's still an incredibly bold move, and I still think maybe it was the right decision to make. But if they miss the playoffs, I mean, man, poor Yarmo, it's not going to be great for him.
Yeah, but I think he was kind of boxed into a corner, so
for sure.
I don't blame him, even if the Jackets miss the playoffs. They play the Hurricanes on Friday, so that's a massive game for them. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's just one game against the Canadiens. They definitely play the Canadiens once. I guess, pertinent information, as we record right now, they're winning 3-1 against Boston first intermission, so who knows? I mean, there's still a good stretch of 13 games left, and like you said, like, chemistry's tough to find in so short a time. But I mean, if listening together, I mean, they've definitely got the horses to go on a little run. And in terms of the other team, Montreal, this is something I wanted to talk about. Arpin Basu, in his column today, was kind of calling out Montreal Canadiens fans who have been complaining mm-hmm. that the Canadiens are playing meaningful games in March and would rather that their team tank the rest of the season to maximize their draft pick. They see, you know, kind of griping, saying, "Oh, what's the point of just making the playoffs to get blown up by Tampa?" Well, he fired back at them in his column, and I couldn't agree more with the statement. You know, he said, first of all, you know, if we had told the players and the fans in September that the Canadiens would be battling for a playoff spot in March, I think everyone would be psyched in Canadiens, you know, in Montreal and Canadians land. I guess there's no Canadians land. It's more of a Leafs thing. But you'd think everyone would be psyched, but instead people are griping about, you know, maximizing their draft spot, even if it, you know, it's only going to, it's not even to give us a meaningful pick. It'll only be top 15. Well, the other issue is that, you know, those fans aren't taking into account the playoff experience you need to one day be successful. I mean, the most important thing for especially young players, but any team in general, is navigating the playoffs, figuring out what it takes, the pressure, especially in a town like Montreal. And, you know, if you look at a lot of the teams that have won recently, I mean, you know, it's almost like you have to lose before you know, to learn how to win. You know, it's really tough to do. So I'm nothing but excited that the Canadians are playing meaningful games down the stretch here. I mean, after a dead season in 2018, you know, you're dying for some kind of meaningful hockey. And, you know, whether or not the Canadians make the playoffs, I mean, obviously everyone will gripe if they don't and say, oh, too bad we didn't, you know, tank and get the playoff pick. But I think in the long run, you know, young players like Kotkaniemi and Victor Mete and Arturi Lehkonen are really going to benefit from playing, you know, meaningful games. And when the Canadians are a playoff contender again in, you know, whatever, 1, 2, 3, 4 years, the seasons like this one and meaningful games like the ones that are about to play down the stretch are really going to come in handy. So kudos to Arpan Basu. If you haven't read it yet and you subscribe to The Athletic, definitely give it a read. I'm assuming you gave it a read as well, Mitch.
Yeah, I did. And yeah, I think you pretty much summed it up perfectly. I mean, you could add a guy like Max Domi even to that list.
Yeah, he's never played a playoff game.
Yeah, and he probably, again, like you said, it's not just about the playoff games. It's about even these games leading up to the playoffs that, you know, are kind of light playoff games in the sense that they matter so much in the standings. And I don't think Max Domi's playing games like that either. Not to, you know, take a massive shot at the Arizona Coyotes or anything, who are actually on a bit of a heater right now, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But yeah, I think that this is just so incredibly important for the development, and you have to start playing games like this at some point, or you're just going to be stuck in, you know, kind of that lottery, you know, lottery purgatory or whatever. So I think, yeah, I think that these games are good regardless. And like you said, I mean, who are these people to be complaining about the fact that the Habs are potentially going to be making the playoffs this year and trying to do that versus, you know, trying to tank for the opportunity to have, you know, another decent player added to their roster.
Yeah, it's just craziness. But that's Canadians fans for you. There's sure. Always a sect that is absolutely nuts. I mean, for me, the craziest one was Keith Pulak and Trey Price, but that's a whole other that's a whole other basket that I don't really want to get into. All right, what I wanted to get into, and this is, it seems like there's always kind of a topic du jour that, you know, all the media outlets are talking about, whether it's TV or radio, and right now it's the Jack Adams Trophy. You know, who's going to win the Coach of the Year? People basically all, you know, making the same points that, you know, there's a lot of good, you know, kind of underdog stories this year. There's the, what the New York Islanders have been doing and how Barry Trotz has, you know, taken a, guide them towards, you know, a top two spot in the Metro Division. There's what Rick Tocchet's done in Arizona, you know, that crazy amount of injuries this year. And now they're, you know, only one point out of the playoffs. But I agree with the counter argument, which is that why does a coach who exceeds expectations for his team have to win the Jack Adams Trophy every year? And what John Cooper's done in Tampa Bay, I mean, we were talking earlier about how head and shoulders Tampa Bay is from everyone else. I mean, that's not easy to do either. Like, yes, they've got a very good team on paper, but I mean, still the coach's job to implement the systems, get the most out of each player, make sure the locker room comes together, find the right combinations. It's definitely not an easy thing to do to manage a room of talented players. And, you know, Tampa Bay's going to either set or come near, very close to setting an NHL record for most points in a regular season. So yes, those two coaches I previously mentioned are having quite the years, but I think that it'd be a shame if John Cooper doesn't get recognized for what he's done this year.
Yeah, you'd think the coach that has 20 more wins than all the other coaches would be considered the
right
the best coach in the league. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, there's we mentioned the how big the point gap is between you know, the Bolts and the Bruins, and you know, some coach riding a PDO wave, which is, you know, if you look back, that's kind of what's happened in the past. I mean, so many coach of the year candidates have been fired the following season just because, like you said, it's a team that overachieves and not necessarily in a sustainable way, almost usually not in a sustainable way. So, yeah, I think it would be nice to see, you know, someone who actually probably coached the best team get rewarded for this. It's the same thing with, like, the GM of the Year award. I mean, the GM of the Year award is the Stanley Cup. So it's kind of ridiculous that it has its own award. So, yeah, it would be... you know, it's going to be an interesting conversation around the Jack Adams. Like you said, there's a lot of candidates that, you know, have done a very fantastic job coaching their teams this year. But I definitely agree. I think if I had a vote, John Cooper would be top of my ballot.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, like you mentioned, you know, before about the Coyotes, I mean, what Rick Tocchet's done given the injuries is nuts.
Right.
I mean, they're 8-2 in their last 10. They're only 1 point in the playoffs. And they still have their starting goalie Antti Raanta injured. He was shut down earlier this year, and they have their top two centers Nick Schmaltz and Derek Stepan also injured right now. I think they had a total of it was 8 or 10 injuries at one point this season, just a ridiculous number, and to some key players as well. And the worst part was that they traded Dylan Strome to Chicago, and they got back a good player, Nick Schmaltz, and he got injured within the first week or two he was traded there. So a pretty tough break for them, and you know, that I guess that's sports for you, that can happen from time to time.
Don't forget Perlini, who dropped a hat trick on them last night.
Oh God, really? Oh, yeah. That's embarrassing. Oh, I saw that got run up by Chicago, but I didn't realize Perlini did them dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, pretty impressive that Arizona's even knocking on the door for the playoffs. If they win their game in hand, they hop Minnesota. So we'll see what happens with them, but for me, it'd be between those two coaches.
Yeah, and just on Minnesota, again, incredible that they're even in this conversation, just because, you know, they traded away Coyle, they traded away Granlund, they lost Koivu for the season. I mean, that's a lot of talent off your roster. Obviously, they got some pretty good players back, and Donato has gone there and done very, very well early on. But yeah, this is going to be the first year ever in Bruce Boudreau's coaching career that he hasn't gotten to 100 points, which is just incredible. I mean,
so that's
the best regular season coach in the NHL over the past, you know, decade or so. Interestingly, it definitely hasn't translated the playoffs. I mean, the Game 7 thing will always haunt him, and that's so interesting from, like, a psychological standpoint. Is, like, you know, when you've lost so many Game 7s and you're the coach, you're supposed to be the one who kind of keeps a level head through all of this. I mean, that has to weigh on you. And,
yeah,
you know, at some point, that's got to get into your game management and just get into your head and kind of make you struggle in these big situations. So that's the unfortunate knock against Bruce Boudreau, who otherwise is just such a good coach. And, I mean, for a team like, you know, Minnesota, anytime you can just keep getting 100-point seasons, I mean, it's got to be hard to get rid of someone like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think the Ducks are regretting it.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he might end up being one of those guys that, you know, just gets labeled as a regular season guy. I mean, you know, it comes down to what you do in the playoffs. And if Bruce Boudreau I don't know if how much you can put it on his head, all this playoff, you know, failure. I mean, I guess he didn't get it done in Washington, and his predecessor, I guess, not like the coach who followed him, Trotsky, did. But it's tough. I don't really know what to say about it. It's tough. Do you blame the players, the coach? So, well, I guess we'll see what happens with Minnesota and whether they even make the playoffs. I mean, the West is an absolute gong show this year. So good luck to Bruce navigating the Central Division, trying to get out and past either Minnesota Winnipeg or Nashville. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how many years left he has coaching. And like you said, Anaheim, I'm sure, is regretting giving him up, given how their season went. Speaking of Anaheim, sorry, I just got distracted. Like, I can't believe that Randy Carlyle got fired and replaced by Bob Murray, a guy who has never coached in his life, and somehow the team is doing better. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Bob Murray looks rough behind the bench.
Yeah,
I saw him the other day, like on TV, and I was asking, like, who the heck is that? Because, yeah, he just looks, eh.
yeah. Anyhow,
But
all right.
somehow it's worked out. Speaking
Yeah.
of the Ducks, though, I wanted to bring up the Ryan Getzlaf bobblehead. Have you seen it?
Dude, it was so terrifying.
Such a shot at him. Basically, if you guys haven't seen it, it's I guess it's kind of like a 10-year challenge kind of thing of when he started out with the Ducks till now, and basically he only has hair on half of the bobblehead. So I don't know how. I guess he must have a good sense of humor about it at this point. I mean, people kind of chirp him for it all the time. So he must have some pretty thick skin about it by now. But yeah, pretty hilarious that even he must have had some kind of approval on that.
Can you imagine if in-house entertainment did him dirty like that and didn't even tell him that they're gonna do like a half hair, half bald bobblehead? It'd
Well, have you
be
seen
so funny.
the James Corden video with David Beckham yet?
I saw the like 20-second clip, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
Yeah, so basically it's, I guess, sort of similar in the same vein. David Beckham being honored by the LA Galaxy for the incredible career he had there. They put up a statue outside of the outside of the rink for him, and James Corden had them draw up a mock statue that looks absolutely nothing like him. It's just like this horrible
Yeah, it was
looking
like the
statue.
Ronaldo one. The Ronaldo one
Exactly,
they
yeah, the
put up at
Ronaldo
the
one's
like
a
that level. Like
great
it was
example.
just
Yeah.
so ugly.
It was just super ugly, and they had David Beckham come in for like final approval. Like, this is the statue we're gonna unveil tomorrow. Like, what do you think? And he's just like, he's trying to be polite, and at some point in the middle, he just like realized, like, no, this is stupid. This is like, and it's so funny. He's just like so frustrated, and then of course they reveal it. So I wonder if there was something similar with Ryan Getzlaf and his bobblehead. But yeah, definitely a little entertaining side note from this week in hockey.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. All right, let's close out this epi with some healthy scratches. You want to start off with yours?
I think we mentioned it right off the top in the show in terms of what it did to my fantasy week, but the Habs' effort against the Ducks, and the fact that the Ducks scored 5% of their goals in the entire season in that
No.
one 8-2 win over the Canadiens.
Oh God, that's so bad. Oh my God.
So yeah,
I thank
just a
God it
healthy
was a
scratch for
ten.
both teams.
Yeah, well, thank God it was a 10:30 start and I didn't watch that. I think I had hockey that night, so I didn't. Thank God I didn't watch it, but yeah, it was pretty rough getting back home and checking the scores. I was like, wait, what? 8-2 to the Ducks?
Yeah, I'd just gotten back from hockey, and you know how you're just like a little tired and maybe a little like grumpy after you've played a sports game. Like,
Yeah.
I was so done with it.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
All right, mine. I try and stay away from the politics on this pod, and I'm so hooked into U.S. politics. It's so captivating, but I gotta do it. My healthy scratch goes to Donald Trump's lying abilities this week. So I don't know if you this is the funniest thing he's done since he stepped into the public
Wow.
light or the political arena. I'm assuming you heard the story about him, or you heard the soundbite of him calling Tim Cook Tim Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at that it was like a business summit or something like that at the White House, and he said, "We thank you very much, Tim Apple." And obviously everyone started laughing at him, and Tim Cook even took a shot and changed his Twitter name from Tim Cook to Tim Apple logo.
Yeah.
So everyone's having good fun. The story should ended there. But of course it didn't because Donald Trump is nuts. So the following day he was at a donor's lunch or a donor's dinner, and he was on stage giving a speech. And in the speech he said that he didn't actually say Tim Cook. He said Tim, or sorry, he didn't say Tim Apple. He said Tim Cook Apple, and he just said the cook part really fast, and the microphones didn't pick up on it properly. But the fake news wanted to make another bad story about Trump, so they just like didn't report on it. And even the donors in the room who were like Republican and like planning on giving money to his campaign were like, why are you lying about this? This so is like
Yeah,
not
it's such a
important. It's such
minor,
a
yeah.
dumb thing. And the other thing is it was a horrible lie, you know? Like if you lie, it's supposed to like make you look better and like protect yourself. Saying Tim Cook Apple makes no sense. Like it's just an awful lie. So again, it should have ended there and that was it. But then, of course not. He then changed the lie again. It was either today or yesterday. He went on Twitter and he said that he said Tim Apple on purpose to save time, but the news media didn't care and they were just interested in putting out negative press about Donald Trump. And that's literally the plot of an Office episode. I don't know if you remember, if you ever watched The Office, but Kevin Malone, like the like not so sharp accountant, comes in and he's talking baby language and he goes, mm-hmm. why say lot word when few word do trick? Like, it's literally Donald Trump's defense. He's like, why say lot word when can say Tim Apple? It's just like, it's just from start to finish such a bizarre sequence of lies. And it just like healthy scratch at him because his lawing has gotten really lazy lately.
Yeah, that's such a ridiculous
I mean, he like I hate the guy, but he's also so funny sometimes. Like the Tim Apple is genuinely hilarious because it's like a stupid mistake and then an even stupider lie and then an even stupider lie. He's just like he's sometimes hilarious. All right, that's as much as like into the political arena I'm willing to get on this podcast. I think I've done pretty well staying away from all politics altogether. I guess other than like the senators have probably pissed off some politicians or something. I don't know. The senators are always messing up, but I try and stay away from Trump as much as possible, but I couldn't resist. I had to bring it up.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like you said, that's just absolutely ridiculous.
All right. Well, until next week, I'll say goodbye, Mitch Anklebender.
Whoa.
Nothing? You got nothing, Mitch Anklebender?
Whoa.